I don't wish to waste my life on futile matters. On the whisper of mist that is most men's days. For those who do, I say, do not concede to that of stone. The fight that is before us is but the calling to awaken one's soul. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in us all.
Well, good morning. If you weren't in at the very beginning, I want to make sure I repeat myself in saying this, that we from the bottom of our hearts want to wish you a happy Father's Day. Whether you are here in person, listening to our podcast throughout the week, or watching online. And we want you to know this. If you find yourself in a stage of life in which you are not a father yet, we want today to be a happy man's day. Because we want today to be about this uniqueness that you as a man bring to the table to this world. And the leader that you are being called to be in whatever sphere of influence you have right now in your life. Even if that's not yet fatherhood, that you are being called to step out and to be a leader and to change this world in an incredible way because of what you bring to the table as a man. You see, today we continue with part three of this four-part series that we are calling Warrior. And if you're here for the very first time or just here for the first time during this entire series revolves around this premise. This premise that we believe with all of our hearts, every single one of us have been created with the heart of a warrior. And you're saying, Ben, why do you say that? Do you say that because that's just something fun and exciting that you can do a series around at Core? No, it's so much better than that. You see, we believe this with all of our hearts because we believe that every single one of us in this room, man, woman, and child, was created in the image of our Heavenly Father. And what I know about my Heavenly Father is this, is that at the very beginning of the story, when we go back to the book of Exodus, one of the ways in which he was described is as a mighty warrior. And if we were created in that image, then we have a piece of that warrior inside of every single one of us, just waiting to be called out. And yet, while every single one of us have a warrior inside of us, just beckoning to come into the forefront of our lives, there is this one thing that consistently holds us back. Some of y'all have been around here long enough to have heard me talk about this over and over again. But in my life, there is this reality, this place where fear comes to the forefront most often. And that very place is when I walk up here on this stage. You see, 13 years ago, when I started this journey into full-time ministry, you could not have convinced me back then that my primary responsibility and role would be to get up on a stage and communicate in front of a large group of adults every single week. The reason why you could not have convinced me of that is this, is because 13 years ago, the level of fear and trepidation that I held then is still the same today. Is that every week before I walk up on this stage, as I'm going through final preparation moments, there is this nervousness that sort of shoots through my veins. This nervousness that rises up inside of me and makes me feel sick. This nervousness that causes me to ask questions about why am I doing this and do I really have to do this again? And some of y'all can relate to that when it comes to public speaking. And yet what y'all have to your advantage is this. You weren't stupid enough to go into a profession in which you had to do that every single week of your life. And yet what I recognize is this, is that as that fear rises up inside of me every single week, it causes me to ask questions I was never meant to ask. It causes me to be held back from things that I was meant to pursue and experience in my life. And every single one of us in some facet of our lives are experiencing the exact same thing. That there is something in our lives that we are being called to. Something better to pursue, something more important to pursue in our lives. And yet this thing called fear has held us back. This thing called fear that when we sit in a room like this and we get challenged and inspired and fired up to walk out into this real world and protect somebody and advance a kingdom and win a battle, as soon as we come face to face with a broken and hurting world, this fear starts to take grip and we begin to shrink back again. We begin to reserve ourselves to normal is just okay. And everybody else is normal, so maybe it's okay for my life to be normal like everybody else. But what if we became a group of people who are willing to admit this? That normal just isn't working. And that normal just isn't worth it. And that deep inside of every single one of us, there is more. There is something better. There is something more important for us to pursue with our lives if we are capable of getting over the hurdle of fear and beginning to pursue this in our lives. And yet here's the problem many of us experience. Is that in our lives, the more we hear the voice of fear, the less we recognize it as fear. And you're saying, Ben, what do you mean by that? Well, as humanity, we have become really creative at taking the fear we experience in our lives and turning it something different. You see, for some of us, we've gotten into the habit of saying, well, I'm just a realist. It's not fear. I'm just a realist who's capable of knowing and being wise enough to see this isn't going to work out, and so it isn't worth pursuing. For others of us, we've chalked it up to our personality, and we're just laid back, and we don't really need more out of our marriage. We don't need more out of our parenting or our finances or our physical, mental, emotional health. We're just kind of good where we're at, and we just kind of go with the flow. And it's not fear that's holding me back from taking the next step. It's just that I don't really care to take the next step. Or for some of us, we've chalked this up to the replacement of fear in our lives. That over time, it's just simply that our dreams have changed, Ben. Like we were 18, we were 20, we were 25, and we were just naive back then. Like we thought we wanted great things out of our marriage or out of our parenting or out of our finances or out of our health. But now here we sit and the reality is my dreams have changed in that area and I really don't need all of that. And as humanity, did I warn you to buckle in? As humanity, what we've become really good at is this. Is that it isn't all of those things. It's that we're capable of witnessing the uphill battle that it takes to reach those goals in our lives and the difficulty that comes with that uphill battle and the high percentage chance that that uphill battle will lead to many failures along the way. And what we determine is this. If it's going to be a difficult uphill battle and there's no promise of success, then maybe it's not worth taking the risk to chase that better in our lives and we just go back to normal again. But what we miss in those moments is this. What we miss is that in the midst of our life, is that life's greatest experiences will almost always come as a result of our ability to push through life's greatest fears. Did you catch that? Our greatest experiences in life will be a result of our ability to push through life's greatest fears. It will always be dependent upon our ability to keep going. Yes, we may hesitate. Yes, fear may cause us to pause, but we become people who are willing to say, I'm not stopping, I'm not quitting, I'm going to keep going because I know what's right and I know what lays out there in front of me and I'm tired of just settling for normal. But take heart in this. We say this often around here, that if you sit there and you find yourself feeling just a little bit personally attacked right now, like you're like, when did Ben start reading my mail? That I'm struggling with fear and I seem to give in to that, what I want you to take heart in is this, is that this tendency of humanity to be hesitant and even quit in the face of fear is not a new issue. It has been a part of the story of humanity for thousands of years, a struggle that all of us deal with and all of us must come face to face with and all of us must figure out how to take that step forward and leave that voice of fear in the rear view mirror. It's one that we find in a story that happens thousands of years ago in the life of a man named Gideon. And we're going to spend the majority of our time this morning hunkered down in that story. Now, if you've never heard the story of Gideon, let me give you just a little bit of a backstory of what this guy named Gideon is living in the midst of. We find Gideon as a Jew. He is an Israelite living in the nation of Israel. And at the time in which Gideon steps onto the pages of history and we read his story, what we know is that Gideon and the nation of Israel has been suffering through 7 years of oppression at the hands of the Midianites. The Midianites were so oppressive and so torturing to the Israelite people that we have countless stories throughout history of them going into Israelite villages and burning entire villages down, that they would pull families out of their homes, line them up and murder them one by one, starting with the kids, then the wife, and ending with the man. That this is what Gideon was living in the midst of. And because of that, what we see happening in Gideon is what happens in many of us. That there is this battle in his mind that is raging. This battle between being the warrior that he knows he is called to be and listening to the voice of fear. We see it so much that what we get from the story of Gideon is this, is that on one side, this inner warrior side of Gideon, we know that Gideon was the only man in his family who was following the one true God. Some of y'all, you know the pain of that, right? You've been in a friend group before. You've been a part of a family in which you are the only one really following God, and how trying that can be over time. And yet Gideon faithfully follows God day after day while being alone in the midst of that. But on the other side, what we see about Gideon's story is that he is consistently going into hiding. He is hiding from the Midianites, hoping that he doesn't get in trouble, hoping that he doesn't get caught, hoping that his family doesn't get killed. And we find this story really come to the forefront and really begin to give us some incredible insight in the book of Judges, chapter 6. If you haven't done so already, it's an incredible time for you to pull out your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open, to pull out the notes page in there. You can follow along with us as we move through the text, even fill in some blanks as we go. But here is how Gideon's story begins, starting in verse 11. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah. Ophrah's been around for a long time, I guess. Hashtag dad joke, had to get one in there. That belonged to Joash the Abizurite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. And so here we see that other end of the dilemma in Gideon's mind. Here we see the fear coming to the forefront. And you may not understand it, but let me give you a little picture. We see Gideon threshing wheat from the crop that's been harvested. But where he chooses to do it is in this giant wine press. And he's doing it in the bottom because he doesn't want to get caught by the Midianites, because what he knows is this. If they see him taking this crop and threshing it for his family and keeping some for his family, that most likely they'll kill him and they'll steal the entire crop from him. And so here Gideon is hiding, trying to just prepare the essentials to make food for his family. As he's doing this, the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon and said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." In the middle of this moment of fear, where all Gideon can hear is this outstanding voice of fear speaking into his life, "Just hide. Don't let anybody see you." An angel comes to Gideon and he says this to Gideon. And maybe it's what you need to hear this morning. Maybe it's the only thing that you need to take with you as you go. In the midst of your circumstances, Gideon, the one thing I'm calling you to hang on to is this: the Lord is with you. No matter what your circumstances look like, no matter what difficulty you're walking through, we have a God who is not scared away by that, who hasn't turned and walked away, but who walks with you through the most difficult circumstances of life. And Gideon, what I want you to see, and John, and Beth, and Kim, and Johnny, what I want you to see is this: you are a mighty warrior. You see, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but we have a God who sees more in us than what we see in ourselves. Hello. Y'all okay? You have a God who sees more in you than you see in yourself. But what happens to Gideon in this very moment is what oftentimes happens to me, and I'm willing to bet that you can relate to this as well. That in this moment, Gideon is being called to more. He's being called to pursue something better with his life. And in the very moment in which Gideon is being called to more, you know what happens? Self-consciousness and insecurity begins to rise up inside of Gideon. All of his self-doubt comes to the surface. And the voice that he hears most clearly is the voice of fear in this moment. Clearer than any other voice telling him, this just isn't going to work out. You're just not going to make it. And you see, in this room today sits a group of people who are being called to something more in some facet of your life. You're being called to be a better spouse. You're being called to be a better father on this Father's Day, or a better mother. You're being called to start serving the local church in some way and giving something of your time and resources back to other people by just rocking a baby for an hour a month so the single mother can drop her baby off in the nursery and be totally attentive to something powerful and relevant for her life and the circumstances that she's walking through. And all you have to do is sit there and hold the most precious thing for an hour every single month. You're being called to be irrationally generous with your finances. You're being called to step back on the treadmill and cut back on the donuts just a little bit more in your life. You're being called to get your finances in order so that you're no longer living paycheck to paycheck, but you have margin and a little bit of comfort in that area. And you can start to communicate security to your wife, who needs to know that we have security in that area of our lives. You're being called to stop an addiction or to stop looking at porn. You're being called to someone to protect, to a kingdom to advance, and to a battle to win. But in order for us to accomplish any of those things, there is one step that must happen first. That we must kill our inner coward. That we must be people who take a stand, and on this day, no matter where we sit or what we're being called to, step forward and kill that voice that screams loudest in the moments where we come face to face with the giants of life that are holding us back. And hear this, if you think you're the only one in this room that is experiencing that, you're not. We are all in the same boat together. We all have a tendency to listen to that inner coward inside of us and to give it more attention than any other voice in our lives. We just all do it in different ways. Some of us listen to that voice of fear most when it comes to pleasing people. And we just want everybody to like us. We just want to be at the cool kids' table. We just want to be in the in crowd. We don't want anybody to be disappointed. And we listen to that voice to make sure that we just do what everybody else wants us to do. Some of us listen to it when it comes to our money. And we get this mentality that I got to hold on tight so that there's enough for me. Some of us listen to it most when it comes to our pride. And I don't want to look weak when it comes to the person I love. And so I'm not real sure I want to say the two most dreaded words in the English language in our relationship. I'm sorry. And we allow pride to get the best of us and continue to listen to that voice of fear. But this is the moment where I believe with all of my heart that God is calling you and God is calling me to stop listening to that voice. To stop giving it the power it has held over you for far too long and to start to fight back. And I believe with all of my heart from this story of Gideon, we get these three incredible tips of how we overcome this hesitancy as a warrior in our life and in our battle. The first tip is this: that in order for us to fight back as a hesitant warrior, we must recognize that every warrior has to fight their inner fear of failure. This fear of failure is one of the, if not the most prominent fear in every single one of our lives. We don't want to mess up. We don't want to fall short. We want to be successful. And because of that, on the flip side, our fear of failure grips us harder than almost any other fear in our lives. And it did the same for Gideon. Continuing in verse 14, Then the Lord turned to him and said, go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you. The God of the universe who holds the world in his hands, I'm sending you. I'm telling you to go do this, and I'm telling you you're going to be successful at it. And you know what Gideon's response is? Unfortunately, probably the same as what mine would be. But Lord, Gideon replied, how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family. You see, this is what happens to me. I'm called to do something bigger, called to do something better. And you know what I immediately do? I start looking for all the reasons as to why it won't work. Anybody else been there with me? Have you seen my past? Have you seen the amount of times I've screwed that one up? I've tried to make it right. I've tried to get better, and I failed time and time again. So why should I try again? God, you know I am just not good at that particular thing. God, I'm not good at getting up on that stage. Why in the world do you want me to do that? I'm not comfortable doing that. We come up with excuse after excuse and reason after reason as to why it won't work. I just don't have the time right now in my life. God, you know I've got all these other things cooking, and right now just isn't the best. And so maybe a little bit later I'll step forward and do that. Or maybe, God, I look at the circumstances of my life right now, and you know my circumstances, God. Right now, because of those circumstances, things probably aren't going to work out very well. And so what if I just wait like a year or two or a decade to where things are a little better and my life is a little bit more put together? Then I'll take the step. Then I'm more assured of success. Some of us are being called to start a business this morning. Some of us are being called to start tithing. Some of us are being called to stop having sex with our boyfriend or our girlfriend before marriage. And yet in every one of those callings, you know what typically accompanies those things? The what ifs, right? Like, what if I stop having sex with my boyfriend before marriage and I want to return back to this level of purity so that sex within marriage can be as incredible as God intended it to be? But what if I lose them if I start saying no and that this is the right thing to do? What if I start a business and it fails and we go dead broke? What if I start giving irrationally generous to a cause that's bigger than myself, and at the end of the month, I don't have enough money to do the things I really want to do? What if I try to stop that addiction and I end up sliding back into it again? You see, the what ifs always communicate this in our lives, that I'd rather continue doing what's wrong than try to do what's right and fail. Uh-oh. The what ifs always tell us it's better to just continue to do what's wrong than to try to do what's right and fail in the process. But what if we became a people who are willing to stop listening to the what ifs, to let go of the what ifs in our lives, in our circumstances, in our pursuance of better, and to fight against our fear of failure that keeps us from even trying for better? And you see, maybe one of the best ways that we can be on each other's teams when it comes to calling out the inner warrior inside of other people is to instill courage in others. And you're saying, Ben, how do I help my spouse? How do I help someone I love? How do I help the people around me become more courageous? Well, it's this one word that actually has the word courage in it. Encouragement. That if you want to help the people you love be the warriors they were called to be, we can fan that into flames if we encourage those people. But what we need to know is this. Encouragement looks different based upon gender. And I thought it wasn't worth giving you the tip of encouraging others to help them fight their fear of failure unless I gave you some tips on how to do it. Because men, right, on this Father's Day, we have to be courageous enough to admit, women, we will never fully understand you. Am I right? Can I get an amen up in here? Every single one of us will never fully understand you. And women, you might not fully understand why we do some of the dumb things we do either, right? There's just a disconnect there between the two of us. And when we encourage our spouse, the person that we love that's of an opposite gender, we must recognize the questions that person asks and needs answered every single day to be propelled forward into the warrior they're being called to be. Men, the women in your life are asking this question every single day. Am I cherished and valued today? Do you cherish me enough to spend time with me, to listen to what I have to say? That's the question the woman that you love is asking every single day. Do you value the things that I do around here and the effort that I'm putting in? Do you value those things every once in a while to step in and take those things off my plate? In the short 11 years of marriage, what I've learned is that one of the sexiest things I can do is this. Is on Fridays, my day off when I'm at home with the kids and Krista is still at school, still at her job. If she can come home on Friday evening, and you guys know how this works, right? There's the one side of your kitchen sink that everything piles up in, everything that's too big to go in the dishwasher. It's like the strainer's there, the mixing bowls are there, the pizza plate is there on that side, and it just piles up and piles up until someone's courageous enough to step in and get their hands dirty and do it. On Friday night, if I can, when she comes home, have that entire section hand-washed and put away, that is the absolute sexiest thing that I can do in marriage. And yet, guys, what we have to recognize is this, okay? The word today is important in this question because the points you earn expire at midnight, y'all. All right? You hear me? So if you want to cash in your points, you better do it before midnight. You know what I'm saying? Because the next day, the question gets asked again, and we start over answering that question again. Now, women, for the men in your life, the question they're not asking is, do you cherish me? No man has ever asked a woman, do you cherish me? The question they're asking is this: do you respect, admire, and believe in me today? Do you respect what I'm trying to do for this family and the effort I'm putting in to try to give us the best future possible? Do you believe that the course I'm set out on, that I can accomplish that? And let me just speak from the inverse. Some of the most powerful moments and most uplifting moments that I've had in my relationship with Krista are the moments where face-to-face or through text, it doesn't really matter to me, honestly, where Krista says things like this. This just happened the other week. Ben, nobody else sees what you do. Nobody else has any idea. But I want you to know I see what you do. And I see the difference that you're making. And I see the way that you're putting people before you. The moments where my wife comes to me and she tells me, when she sees my trepidation of walking up here on this stage again and again and again, Ben, I believe in you. You might not believe in yourself, but you got this. You've been called to this. You can do this. That's the way in which my wife answers that question in an amazing way and encourages me and propels me to be the warrior that I have been called to be. Your significant other is craving that from you. And the question you have to ask is this: every single one of us get an opportunity to plant a seed in the people we love. What seed are you planting? One of fear or one of courage? You have that option. Are you willing to encourage them and answer the questions they need answers to, allow them to push aside this fear of failure that lives in every single one of our lives? And then secondly, we must recognize that in Christ we have everything we need to fight and win. I love this passage that Paul writes in Romans chapter 8. Does it mean he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity or are persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger or threatened with death? Does it mean God has abandoned us and we're on our own fighting in this by ourselves if we go through the troubles of this life? And Paul responds, no. Despite all these things, whatever you can walk through, however bleak the situation looks, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. You know what I tend to do? When it comes to the battles of life, I focus solely on my own capabilities. What do I have at my human disposal to win the battle? And in this passage, you know what God's speaking into our life? that's not the entirety of the equation. That's actually the minor part of the equation. Don't take offense to this. I could do this with or without you. I've just chosen to do it with you. I'm bigger than anything that stands on the other side. Be it death, danger, calamity, trouble, hunger, destitution, persecution. It doesn't matter. I'm bigger than all those things. Whatever you have plus me always equals victory. It doesn't matter what you have. Just bring whatever it is. And you add me to the equation with Christ. You have everything you need to fight, but not just to fight. You have everything you need to win. This very thing happened to Gideon. Gideon, as he was called to lead the Israelite army to battle, to defeat the Midianites and end the oppression, he looked over his soldiers and what he saw was this: we don't have enough to win. He had 32,000 soldiers at his disposal. And the reason why Gideon was convinced there was no way he could win this battle is this, is because the Midianites had over 135,000 soldiers in their army. He was outnumbered by over 100,000. And Gideon's like, God, I'm not sure why you're calling me to this, but you know I don't have enough to win. You know we don't have enough manpower to get this thing done. And God had a different message that he was bringing to the table. Check this out. In chapter 7, verse 2, the story continues. Then the Lord said to Gideon, in the midst of his complaining, in the midst of him seeing why he would not win and he had too little, you have too many warriors. And Gideon's like, wait, God, I think my hearing's going wrong. Did you just say too many? God, I know you're all powerful, but your math is terrible. I'm outnumbered by over 100,000. And then God says this: if I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. And so he said, Gideon, I've got another plan for you. I want you to call all 32,000 of your soldiers together, and I want you to give them this directive. Whoever is afraid, whoever is timid, go home to your wives and children. You don't have to fight with us if you're afraid. And in that moment, 22,000 men turned around and went home. And now the odds were really not ever in his favor. Hunger Games, sorry. And now he was outnumbered 135,000 to 10,000. And God said, well, Gideon, I'm not done yet. I want you to send the rest of the men that are there down to the water. And I want you to have them drink. And they're going to drink in one of two ways. Some of them are going to lap it up like a dog. Some of them are going to scoop it into their hands. And they're going to drink it like this. And everybody who does it this way, I want you to send them home. And what was left standing were but 300 men. 300 men left to go up against 135,000. God, you're crazy. Like, is this just the way to get me to the end of my life? Is that what this is really all about? Or what's going on here? And in this moment, the message that God was trying to portray is one that you and I often look. It's this final tip that with God, oftentimes, the way forward starts with a step backward. With God, oftentimes, the way forward starts with a step backward. I can't begin to tell you all the ways in which I have messed up over the course of the last 13 years of full-time ministry. But there have been far too many moments to admit, far too many moments to count of sliding attendance, of failed programs, of poor leadership decisions on my behalf, of salvation messages made without anybody responding. And if I were being really honest with you, there are a few in the crowd who know this, who pray with me every Monday morning, that I'm in a little bit of a funk right now. That I find myself in a position at this stage of my life in which I've gotten into this funk every Sunday. I leave here a little bit disappointed in myself. And with these feelings that I just can't describe. And this week, as I was preparing for this very message, it's like God was speaking something so ridiculously clear into my life. God was saying, Ben, you better check yourself. Because if you start to take the blame for all the decreases, there will come a day in which you'll try to take the credit for all the increases. Quit taking the blame for all the decreases. Because then you'll try to take the credit for all the increases. It's on me. I'll take the responsibility for those things if you'll just turn it over to me. Stop allowing that to dictate your fear and the voices that you live to. You're bigger than that. You're better than that. I'm bigger than that. I'm better than that. And I'm calling you to more. But starting down that journey will always feel like it's starting with a loss. Because chasing something better will always force us to give up something that kind of hurts to give up. We'll always take steps in which it kind of feels like we're starting backwards in order to move forwards. But what I believe with all of my heart is this, is that sometimes God has to do something in us that feels like a step backward in order for him to do something through us that's a giant step forward. Sometimes God has to do something in us that feels like a step backward in order for him to do something through us that's a giant step forward. So what happened with Gideon? The battle was impossible to win. Not 32,000 to 135,000, not 10,000, not 300. And then God rolls out his battle plan. You know what God's battle plan was? 300 to 135,000. God comes up with this brilliance. Gideon, I want you to take those men, and I want you to take your little trumpets with you, and I want you to walk into the middle of the camp of those 135,000 men, and then you're going to take these root beer mugs with you, and what you're going to do is you're going to all blow your horn, and you're going to throw your root beer mugs down in the middle of the camp. And when you do that, the victory will be yours. Gideon's like, what have I gotten myself into? Like, all right, at this point, I've listened to you this much. I might as well just die. So let's go for it. I got no other choice. And so they go in there with their little trumpets, their ram's horns, and they blow on them, and they all smash their glasses in the middle. And in verse 21, it says this, while each man, and if you have a pen and you're taking notes, these next three words are words to underline. While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. History tells us that in this moment, because of the blowing ram's horn and the smashing glass, 120,000 Midianites ended up going to battle with each other and killing themselves. They all fought each other because they weren't sure what was going on, and the rest of them fled and retreated, and Gideon and his small army of 300 brought home victory for the entire nation of Israel. You see, sometimes the key to victory isn't advancing mightily. Sometimes the key to victory is just simply found in standing your ground. I know this is right. I know this is where we're supposed to be as a family, and I'm not moving. I'm not retreating backwards. I'm not giving in to what anybody else says or wants me to do. I'm standing here strong. And I may not have the courage to push forward, but I have the courage to stand here and to hold my ground in the face of whatever could be thrown at me. And I'm willing to recognize that life's greatest fears and life's greatest accomplishments always go hand in hand. And so I have to be a warrior who's willing to look fear in the face and not shrink backwards. For many of you, you've heard the stories of my two sons. And you've heard the many stories about our youngest, Brantley, his absolute fearlessness. I told you guys the story of last summer taking them to Seltzer Pool for the very first time. And if you've ever been to Seltzer Pool before, you know if you go to the diving boards at the deep end, it's not like a residential pool diving board where it's like you've got a whole foot off the water. They're like 4 or 5 feet off the water. And the deep end is 12 feet. And my little guy, he just goes rushing over to the diving board and climbs up on there and finds the courage to just run and jump off. I don't know what's out there. I don't know how much trouble I'm going to get in, but I'm just going for it. I don't have fear of whatever it is that lies out there. But what I know about my two sons is that they couldn't fall on more opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to fear. Our oldest, Beckham, when we were getting ready to name them as we adopted them and give them their new names, it was very evident very quickly that fear was something that gripped the heart of our oldest son. And as we got ready to name him, we made the decision that we wanted to give him the middle name Joshua. Because we wanted this truth that we find in Joshua 1:9 that was spoken over his life and his story to be spoken over our son every single day in the midst of the fears that would rise up in him and grip him and hold him back from what God was calling him to. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear, for the Lord your God goes before you and is with you. That our son needed that truth over his life. And when it comes to water, that opposite ends of the spectrum of fear couldn't be more true. You see, when we ask our oldest, Beckham, are you going to go jump off the diving board like your brother? He just replies like this, no thanks. Bubby will do that. And last summer, we took them on our first vacation to the beach. And we had an opportunity one day. They went back with the rest of the kids and the family across the street back to our beach house. And we had our own pool in the backyard. And they were all swimming. And it was like just a little time for Krista and I to stay on the beach together and just spend some one-on-one time. And so we were sitting there. And an adult came rushing over. And they're like, you got to come back with us. I think everything's fine, but we just need you. And so we went running back over. And there was Beckham sitting on a chair on the side of the pool. And we could tell that he was shaken up and that he had been crying. And they began to tell us the story that he was sitting on the edge of the pool and he had his floaties on and he kind of fell into the pool, but they must not have been latched in the back. And so the floaties fell off and he sunk like a rock straight to the bottom. They're like, we pulled him out. He's fine. Nothing really happened. I think he's all good. And in that moment, this fear went to a whole new level. As he sensed failure, it was like, there ain't nothing good from that water and there ain't no reason for me to ever be in it. And it's like we took all of these steps backward. And then this year, we took them to the beach again. And as we were out in the ocean and at the pool and as we were in the water with him, we're like, buddy, it's okay. You're going to be fine. We're right here with you. He began to put his head underwater. This is a dude that doesn't like taking baths, okay? He does not like getting in the bath. And he began to put his head underwater and like he'd come get goggles and he'd put his head under there and he'd swim. And we got to a point where we were at the pool and we're like, buddy, just go to the side, all right? And I'm right here and you can jump in and I'll catch you. And so he started doing that. And then I was like, buddy, okay, I promise you got your floaties on. You're going to be good. You just jump in and you'll pop right back up. I'm not going to catch you this time. And so he jumped in and he went underwater and he came back up and there was this smile on his face. And my oldest son, battling through all the fear, said this, Daddy, I'm brave. And I said, buddy, you are. But you never would have known that unless you jumped off the side. You see, far too many of us are waiting for our bravery to show up while we're standing on the edge of the pool saying, there's nothing good in there. There's no reason for me to jump. And God said, I created you with the heart of a warrior, but the only way that you're really going to see that is if you jump, is if you go for it. And you know that the God of the universe has you, and he promises that you're going to be okay. And sometimes it's going to feel like a step backwards because you're going to jump, and guess what? You're going to go under the water for a second. But those floaties that I've given you, they're going to bring you right back up. And in the end, it's going to be this giant step forward that I'm bringing to fruition in your life, in your marriage, in your parenting, in your finances, in your health. But you'll only get that if you jump. You see, you keep looking at this, that every warrior's greatest fear is failure. But what you miss is that every warrior's greatest pain is regret. You see, in the long run, it'll be far more detrimental to you not jumping than it will be to jump and go through the circumstances and the step backwards and the difficulties along the way. See, you are being called to stand firm. And like Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 6, you have been given every piece that you need to strap on for the battle that's coming your way, for the hurt and the brokenness of this world. Why? So that you can stand firm. So that you can look at everything this world throws at and you can say, I have Christ in my corner and I have everything I need to not just fight back, but to win. You are being called to be a warrior. But to do that, you must determine that this is the day where you stop listening to the voice of fear over everything else. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who loves us enough to give us everything we need to fight and win, even in the difficulties of this life. for being a God who doesn't force us to do it on our own, for being a God who does something in us so that you can do something incredible through us. But God, in order for us to experience life's greatest, we have to overcome life's greatest fears. And so may we be people who are willing to take a stand on this day, to stand our ground, to overcome fear, and to begin to become the warriors you've called us to be. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. You see, today we started with a little bit of fun at the beginning of our service, but we also thought it would be great for us to end with just a little bit of fun. And so if you're sitting there this morning and you've already crumpled up your weekly, getting ready to throw that away, this is your opportunity to pull that back out. For two of you men out there, on the back of your weekly, there is a large core logo on the back of that in bright red that we have stamped right on the back of your weekly. If you've got one of those, we would love for you to just head out to the Connections booth. We've got two gifts for those two different people. One of them is a giant man crate, like we gave to the loser up here, but it's bigger than that, full of all sorts of bacon goods, bacon jerky, bacon seasoning, bacon jam. It's got all the manly bacon stuff you could need right in there. And then the second gift that someone will get is a camo bag that's full of like a grill father apron, and we've got spices and we've got sauces and we've got summer sausage in there from Pinhook Meats. And it's Father's Day. Today's about you. Cook the rest of them hot dogs, and we put one giant T-bone steak in there for you to throw on the grill for you today. And so we'd love for you to head out and grab one of those, and we wanted to bring everybody into the mix. As you head out, there's a tent outside as well, full of glass bottle pop that we'd love for everyone just to stop at the tent, make sure you grab one of those on your way. Next week, we're finishing up this series, and it is going to be powerful. You are not going to want to miss it. On top of, we can't give away all of our secrets, but we have a surprise at the end of our service next week that we're going to be making a really big announcement that we are so excited for and that we believe with all of our heart is just another work of God that's propelling us forward that all y'all aren't going to want to miss. So make sure you're here next week. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Have a happy Father's Day. We hope to see you soon.